Schizotopia. As always, I'm your host, Maxwell Cody, and joining me tonight, once again, the Dorlore himself, Dorian Z. Bell, and my absolute favorite Florida man, the one and only, the greatest Jewish cowboy since Neil Diamond, Mr. Isaac Egger. How's it going?
Hell yeah, brother.
Oh!
You know, Labor Day weekend. Randy Savage was from Sarasota as well, from my hometown.
I'm pushing, I'm grinding right now to get I was hitting that midday slump, and so to get into pod mode, I had two espressos, I took a B12, I took some ginseng extract, and then I got in a ice shower for 5 whole minutes to get myself into the headspace, into the pod, so that we could do this very belated Barbenheimer episode. But it's Labor Day, I feel like, but actually I think it's appropriate, because it's Labor Day weekend. We're going into Labor Day weekend, at least.
What's an ice shower?
I just app the coldest water it'll go to.
So a cold shower.
Okay, yeah, fine. But here's the thing. Hold on. I'm going to challenge you on this. Okay. Because in California, the water never gets as cold as it gets out here in the Midwest. I will say that. It's just never, I've never seen water this, or felt water this cold come out of a faucet in California. So that's to me, amazing. When I turn the water all the way to cold out here in Michigan, Even in the summer, here at the end of summer, to me that is ice water, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, the lead in it really helps it cool down.
It retains the retains the cool. Yeah.
Are you trying to become a Huberman husband?
What is that?
The guy who's always on Joe Rogan with I guess he's got some sort of health PhD, and he's always coming up with body hacks, life hacks. He's a big ice bath guy, apparently.
Oh, I would love to do actual. Max. I've always liked cold water. I would do the actual ice bath stuff if I could.
You also are supposed to stare directly into the sun for 20 minutes every morning. Like
until it tells you to cut off your ears. That's a deep dive Patai reference. Thank you.
I can stare into the moon. All right.
I was inspired by Will Blunderfeld. Is that his last name?
Yeah, dude. I jack off with my bros constantly.
Well, not
we
that part.
We love Will here. Yeah.
Sorry.
I like the perineum sunning. I was just like, you know, doing like the happy baby yoga pose into the sun, letting it tan my.
Oh, you do the weird part, not the normal part that I do.
Yeah, not the piss drinking, not the jerking off your homies, touching tips.
You know what drives me crazy is when people say that line about piss being sterile. Because it's not sterile, not at all.
Is it dangerous or what?
Well, I mean, it depends on what kind of bacteria you have in your bladder, but your body's full of bodily things, so it becomes sterile as it exits the kidneys, but then it sits around in your fucking bladder all the time. You're still like going to drink the inside of someone's fucking bladder.
So it's probiotic. So what? That sounds good too.
Yeah, I mean, but not sterile.
You know? But there's good and bad bacteria, right? I mean,
yeah. Is it sauerkraut? It's sterile and I like the taste. No, that's not true. It's wonderful because it's not sterile.
Listen, we're supposed to be talking about Barbenheimer, the thing that everybody stopped caring about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
I'm just trying to get us ready to talk about the beautiful scene where she finally goes to the gynecologist.
Dorian, did you end up seeing the movies, or are you in the dark here?
I mean, I knew about the gynecologist scene. Obviously,
That's in my notes too.
Yeah,
Don't ruin the bit, Isaac.
Move on.
Edit it out. Anyway, I don't care.
Whatever. Listen, before there is no time to edit this episode. This episode is coming in right on the fucking wire because it is the last day of the month, and I always try to get at least 3 episodes in. So there will be no editing of this episode. Everyone is getting the Brobenheimer raw dog experience tonight.
Slur mode activated.
Yeah, slur mode activated.
I'm gonna get him in there.
If we all say a different slur at the same time, it'll be just offensive and incomprehensible enough that
let's try it.
Okay, our own Manhattan Project to create a new slur, a new world-changing slur by the end of the episode. All right, so the first thing I want to talk to you guys about is Barbenheimer, not the movies. We're not going to talk about the movies yet. I just want to talk about Barbenheimer as a cultural phenomenon. 2023 will forever be Barbenheimer's summer. What did that mean?
What does it mean?
Well, here's my main takeaway. As a man who's seen both the movies but won't talk about them currently. You know. Yeah. But the as a cultural phenomenon, what this all tells me is the fact that even in some kind of attempt to be genuine, which both of these films I think kind of were, it needs to be buried inside of the opposite affect of what might be expected, right? They're both kind of practices in irony, because in Oppenheimer's case, we're talking about a film about a terrible thing which may or may not have had to have occurred. But at bottom, it's talking about a story of someone who accomplished something incredible despite incredible odds, right? And so that's actually our really kind of optimistic film with a real lesson to be learned. Whereas Barbie, it still has this kind of optimistic lesson in the end, but it's far more intellectually convoluted. It has a lot more to do with this attempt at self-affirmation despite the expressed affect of, you know, kind of consumerism and superficiality. And so both of them are kind of expressing interesting, genuine points, but both is kind of buried in the opposite of what you might expect. So even when we're really trying to express ourselves and what we mean and what we want and what we think, it has to be buried in the opposite. We've moved on to that point of irony.
All right. Well, is that okay? But you're giving me a synopsis of the movies. I'm asking what did Barbenheimer summer mean for the people?
Well, that's what I'm saying though, right? Is that's just what culture is now, is expressing something in a way opposite to the way that you feel it.
Well, I guess Oppenheimer didn't have the kind of pretext that Barbie had, I think, for the general population. I don't think most people knew who Oppenheimer was. Everybody knew who Barbie was. So that it was
kind of relatively few people died from Oppenheimer than from Barbie. So
correct.
Yeah. Sorry.
unless the nuclear total war happens, it will be the microplastics that get us before the bomb. So that is still, if things continue on the way they have. Yeah, that is true.
But maybe there's the one silver lining I see in this is that it seems to have supplanted the Marvel summer magic. So right, all the Marvel movies bombed this summer, right?
Supplanted, but only by sublation, right? Because both these movies are Marvel movies, right? In the sense that Oppenheimer is just a superhero movie about a guy that feels regret over inventing the prestige superhero movies that everyone loves, and Barbie is. I mean, it's another Mattel movie. It might as well be, right? It's Transformers, but with visits to the gynecologist and comments on patriarchy.
Okay. There's two big cultural things about Barbenheimer summer that I think are interesting. One is that I feel like this should be the official end of the pandemic. If everybody's saying let's go out and see movies again, that should be the clearest sign that the pandemic is truly over. People are truly over it if they're all willing to go back to the movies. And the second one is, this is more convoluted, but, you know, because of the war in Eastern Europe and because there's been threats and a little bit of nuclear saber rattling, the fact that something that we thought had ended with the Cold War is kind of back on the table again, which is nuclear war. And so it's like Oppenheimer is like the sort of foreign policy paranoia. And then Barbie, because Barbie is all about our own, you know, gender wars, culture conflict, that sort of stuff. Barbie is like the what's going on internally in America right now. It's the culture war. And the fact that both of those movies were formed into this one super movie that everyone was going to see. I don't know. I think it's interesting. I think there's a interesting synchronicity going on there.
Yeah. I mean, I did not expect in Barbie to actually have Ken and the other assigned male at birth Barbies to start a patriarchy or to attempt to. And I think that that really says something about the world we live in.
I guess we can talk about the actual movies now, and we should talk
about
Barbie.
I got one
Barbie.
More thing I could say about the phenomenon, which was there was a communal aspect to it. It was, I think maybe it was a sort of end of the pandemic thing because people were gathering together in physical spaces, which I hadn't seen done in a long time. Like the last time I remember, I don't know, seeing something like that was like Harry Potter almost, where people would dress up and participate in at least like maybe the movie, but also like the book releases and stuff like that. And it's a sign of something, I suppose, that the only thing that we will get together and participate in together in these large groups would be a Barbie movie.
Yeah. I mean, sorry to have dragged it into stuff about the movie. I'm just really eager to prove that I've seen these movies and I'm insecure about it. But no, you make a good point, which is just the fact that it's been a very long time, even before the pandemic, that we've had phenomena occurring like this. And of course, like the pandemic ended up really kind of knocking theaters down. But I don't remember the last time that I went to a movie where there was any kind of real cultural phenomena surrounding it, where people might dress up or anything like that you mentioned. And I'm saying that as someone that like loves movies and, you know, worked as like a projectionist for many, many years just so I could like watch movies all the time. So it's like it's curious to me that this has been something that's been missing from our culture for so long. And it makes sense to immediately think that the pandemic is kind of the thing that's responsible for it, because it's responsible for killing or throwing into kind of hibernation theaters. But I think there's an interesting question to ask, like about why we just haven't had that phenomena for even, you know, ages before the pandemic. I mean, streaming services and, you know, constantly redoing shit, reboots.
It wasn't that inbuilt consumer
it,
thing either. I think the access to this aesthetic that people had
The last massive movie event was Endgame. That was the last time you had, I mean, people were joking.
That was like 2018,
movie,
right?
I believe it was summer 2019. And it was, I remember that was the last time I saw a theater that was completely packed and people were dressing up and people were posting about it on social media. And like, that's the only thing close to Barbenheimer that's happened in the last couple of years. And of course it was the big Marvel movie finale, but not actually a finale. And people were joking then that Endgame was going to be the last movie.
I've heard people say that about Oppenheimer, which is really funny.
Which, I mean, and this is the thing. This is why, at least for me, cultural, just big picture, it's like Oppenheimer is such a white pill, because it's not CG driven. It's a 3-hour long character piece, and it's almost entirely close quarter dialogue, and it's about a man and his paradoxical vision of creating a weapon that will both bring peace but could also bring about the apocalypse. And
yeah,
I mean, that it was successful. I'm shocked that like normal people went and saw it and liked it, and it shows you that there is a hunger for that kind of storytelling that still exists. And so I really enjoyed Oppenheimer, and I also just really enjoyed that other people actually enjoyed Oppenheimer.
So I'm a little bit more cynical about it, though. I think it is cool that I was a big part of it, that we made Oppenheimer as a movie that, you know, actually didn't show any footage of World War II, right? But it still showed Oppenheimer fucking. So it as like a deeply personal thing rather than just being explosions and shit. Even given an opportunity to do so tastefully, it didn't use that, which is cool. But the I really do think that apart from just the fact that it's Christopher Nolan and it has the cast that it does, which it's also interesting that the marketing didn't play off of that cast that much until the movie was already out. Like, it was mostly just Cillian Murphy and then that's it, because they were really kind of focusing on just the fact that it was him as Oppenheimer, the one guy we're supposed to focus on. And then later on, it's like, oh yeah, by the way, we have everyone else in this fucking movie that has ever been in Hollywood. But my cynical take on it is the fact that apart from the fact that it's Christopher Nolan, the real reason that it was successful is really the existence of Barbie. It was so weird and kind of there was such a strong juxtaposition between Barbie coming out that same weekend that it was just funny, and then the bit made the movie work.
There's right? like almost like a gender dimorphism between
yes,
these two movies.
Yeah,
and it's no surprise that Max, a boy, would like Oppenheimer, and I assume he didn't like Barbie.
Yes, I did, but we haven't gotten to Barbie yet. I do want to say, I believe in Oppenheimer, there's only one, maybe two explicit sex scenes that I can think of off the top of my head. And what I liked about it is that I was like, wow, Berkeley communist BPD pussy between the 1940s and the 21st century didn't change at all. It's like they look the same, yeah. They act the same, it's the exact same MO, hasn't changed at all. I was like, wow, Oppenheimer, same, bro.
Yeah, I mean, you and I both have that experience, apart from the fact that I've never fucked. But it is still absolutely true. Yeah, it's weird. But I would saw off both of my legs to have sweet, respectful love with Florence Pugh.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you'd saw off both your legs to light off a nuke.
Well, yeah. Anyway, that's the only time. I get asked about like who my celebrity crushes are by like people that I date or whatever. It's just like the fun little like let's see how jealous and weird we can be early on in relationships kind of question that I hear a lot, and I never have an answer because I just don't care. But yeah, she'd be on that list.
We're gonna get into one of my secret celebrity crushes soon enough. But I do want to say
Ryan Gosling.
Well, you know, there's that one too.
Well,
but,
Ryan Gosling is literally me. So
I do want to say this other thing about Oppenheimer that still kind of blows my mind is that like you said, there are no actual World War II combat scenes. I was dreading seeing Oppenheimer. I was dreading it the same way I dreaded seeing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because I the whole time I'm thinking I'm going to see something I really don't want to see. I'm thinking I'm going to see a very high production graphic reshowing of, you know, the bombing of Hiroshima.
Yeah, the fact that we didn't see that is
I was also expecting wild. That we were going to see Iwo Jima or Okinawa. And we're going to see how gruesome, you know, the combat was, because that sort of factored into the decision where it was like, well, if it was this hard to take these two little islands, how hard is it going to be when we're actually on the mainland right. or trying to take Tokyo? Right. I was expecting, you know, to get across to the audience I was expecting a bigger justification for the bomb. And I thought that was going to be expressed through basically propaganda, showing really,
right.
really graphic
but,
war scenes.
But we know that for all of Christopher Nolan's faults and for all of the ways that his ideology leaks into his movies a lot of the time, especially the Dark Knight movie with Bane, the fact of the matter is that he at least wants to be ambiguous about shit. And so, like, he couldn't have possibly included, like, Iwo Jima or anything, right? Because then you'd feel as if there was some kind of reason on an emotional level, even if intellectually there wasn't. Like he's too cool for that. What was the point of Dunkirk though? Like he wasn't asking a question about like, should we have not made this bomb that changed the world? I mean, Dunkirk was just about like, dudes were trapped and it sucked and I want to have explosions and stuff. But like he wasn't basing it off of like one central question that he wanted to ask, right? It was like,
yeah, but I would still say that movie, we want to see the triumph of the British, we want to see the triumph of the Allies, and we see brutal combat. I mean, you know, it's part of the movie, and I just, it's not like Christopher Nolan's a guy who's ever shied away from violence. I was just very surprised how subdued Oppenheimer ended up being. And even the explosion itself, when we finally get to the Trinity explosion, that is done in a subdued way as well.
But that's exactly what I'm saying, right? It's not about him not being into violence or like him not being into the grandeur of all this stuff or wanting to express it.
Yeah. I think that was a very conscious choice.
I think it was conscious and I think it was great. But if you hadn't seen the movie, you could have probably predicted that he wouldn't show footage of the war because he would still want to make it so that the affect we experience is one that fosters neutrality over whether or not we should conclude that the invention of the bomb is good or not.
I have to hard disagree because Nolan, one of the few remotely conservative voices in Hollywood, you know, one of the few guys who makes movies that are conservative in as much as they aren't explicitly left wing.
I'm a big Ayn Rand person, by the way.
I'm expecting. Is he really?
Oh, Snyder is a big
Zack Snyder. Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
but I guess whatever. Actually, no. I would have never.
Did you know that James Woods was an executive producer on Oppenheimer?
Oh,
James
yeah,
Woods, like the QAnon J6. Stop the Seal guy.
Really?
Yeah, he was.
But in any case, I wasn't expecting that at all. I really thought I was so dreading going to see Oppenheimer because I thought I was going to have to sit through some Graveyard of the Fireflies or some even like Saving Private Ryan levels of brutality. Mm-hmm. And that's almost nowhere found in the film. It's just not what the movie's really about.
And it wasn't explicitly anti-communist either, which I thought was very interesting.
No, this is another part of the movie that I liked where it's like, well, everybody was part of that intellectual milieu. You know, any of these like nerds you're going to be recruiting, of course, they're all sort of pinkos. But then that's the other thing is like they weren't really communists. And actually, one of my favorite parts of the movie is when Oppenheimer says, wait a second, you didn't choose me in spite of my left wing connections. You chose me because of my left wing connections, because then this could be used to control me later. He finally understood how politics actually works. That was a great part.
Yeah. The part that was surprising to me was in terms of like grandeur and whatnot, or lack thereof, was the fact that in these scenes where Oppenheimer is being like essentially interrogated by people around him, it's done in these like small rooms. It's not this like big aggressive like. There's he's standing in a hall full of 200 people who are all, you know, making him out to be as important as he is or anything like that. It's not these congressional hearings that you see for like January 6th and stuff. There are these little backroom things in an enclosed space. I kind of expected a little bit more grandeur on that end.
I talked about like the horny nerd shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that like this to me, like, Neil deGrasse Tyson nutted once an hour to this movie, at least. Because, you know, that scene where he's like hitting on his second wife, Kitty, and he's like describing quantum physics and he puts his hand up to her hand and like swoons her with his intellect. I was cracking the fuck up. I thought that was so funny. I was like, this is like every nerd's wet dream right here. It almost reminds me of the peep show, like Mark Corrigan explaining the Stalingrad, like working. so to like, they definitely, first of all, they made Oppenheimer way too good looking. Like he was a much, they needed the Jew face, killing it up a bit more, in my opinion. Yeah. He was too handsome to be such a nerd.
But in terms of Hollywood depictions of famous people that are like, of course, going to be significantly more attractive than they are, they didn't get it as wrong as they could, right? Like I've seen way worse occur, but yeah,
Emily Blunt that butt chin. I don't know if that was CG or they actually gave her like a chin.
No,
prosthetic.
That's her chin. A low to no CGI film. So that if they didn't do it for the bomb, they didn't do it for her.
It would have been funny if they were like, we were not doing a CG bomb, but we were going to go ahead and CG this butt chin onto Emily Blunt. Yeah, that'll be our one CG. But I mean, they definitely
were like anime titties.
motion to just believe that
to make
from
her
now
less
on.
Attractive, which I thought was very it was incredible that the male lead, they're like, no, we're gonna keep you nice and handsome, but then the female supporting role is like, nah, we're giving you a butt chin, we need you to be
that's her chin. What? Dude.
No, it's not. That but is not no is. I'm gonna dude Emily Emily Blunt, I gotta Google
butt
Emily
chin. Type in butt
Jamie
chin.
Pull that shit up. Emily Blunt chin Oppenheimer. There's no way that was her fucking actual face.
But I mean, hear me out with that, which is that I mean, if he was an ugly guy that was surrounded by super gorgeous, like, you know, ridiculous women, then that would, I think, for most men, diminish his nerd factor more than him just being attractive and surrounded by less attractive women. You know,
am I out of my fucking mind? They altered her face for this movie. I'm gonna, I feel
they,
like I'm going
they
insane.
Added witch prosthetics to her.
Max, you like weak chins? You like girls with weak chins? That's
yeah,
your type?
What's up with that, Max?
Yeah.
No, what are you talking about?
You know,
I'm saying they made her look different. Accused of Botox? What is this?
Well, yeah. We've all been accused of Botox.
She's been accused of Botox? I don't know. Am I going? I just assume that they did something to prosthetically alter her face to make her look different.
You know, Botox is one of the most poisonous substances on earth.
Botulism? Yeah,
that's pretty fun. Yeah, I just eat like all the swollen cans I see around my house so I can
stay
I can
young forever,
tighten up the skin. Yeah.
Wow, did I just out myself? There's people who
you did. We knew
she
this.
Didn't. She's just she's they're saying there's people who are
you're
saying,
just calling Emily Blunt ugly. Is what you're
saying. Apparently, dude, but there are, to be fair, there are people, Oppenheimer star Emily Blunt accused of Botox on her face, quote, doesn't look like herself anymore, unquote. So there's other people who thought that she didn't look like herself in this movie. I thought that it was intentional to make her look more like Oppenheimer's actual wife, and I thought it was odd that they went out of their way to alter her face but not his. And now it's just, and now it, and apparently I can't find anything about her actually getting her face altered for the actual movie. Just people saying that it looks like she's had too much plastic surgery. So,
as a man who just Google searched Emily Blunt, not because I don't know what she looks like, but because I wanted to test your hypothesis, I'm looking at literally 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9 images of her on one screen right now, and she looks different in all of them. These are all different people. So
okay,
this
all
is
right.
A gossip
well, that
podcast
makes me feel
now.
A little bit better. Makes me feel a little bit better. Art in the age of infinite Emily Blunt. So
yeah.
All right. Do we have anything about Oppenheimer that? Oh, dude. Okay. Before I forget this blew my mind. Okay. Are you guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Oppenheimer went to Japan after the war.
Yeah. And they liked him.
They were like, tell us about physics, Oppenheimer. There was no protests. Yeah. Nobody tried to kill him. And just to put this in context, one of my all-time favorite documentaries that I recommend to everyone is called The Emperor's Naked Army Marches On. The Emperor's Naked Army Marches On. And I don't want to spoil it because there's a twist in the documentary that was incredible. Okay, that's all I'm gonna say. I'm pretty sure you can watch it for free on YouTube. I'll try to include a link, but it's all about this guy who he's an ex-Japanese soldier, World War II veteran, and he decides it's the emperor's fault that all this shit happened, and he goes to jail because I can't remember what he throws at the emperor. He does something. He tries to like pie the emperor or something like that, and he goes to jail for it. And when he gets out, he goes, no, I'm gonna resume my campaign against the emperor, and I'm going to get Japan to admit its guilt. So he goes and he starts interviewing some of his old war comrades, and I'll just leave it at that. But
the twist is that Yukio Mishima fucking disembowels him.
I think Mishima was already dead by the time that this came out. But I highly recommend The Emperor's Naked Army Marches On. But my point is that you know, Japan kind of took a lot of the shame on themselves. And I went to Hiroshima. I hitchhiked to Hiroshima, which I know sounds like a metaphor for something horrible or a euphemism for something horrible, but I literally hitchhiked to Hiroshima. And I remember people would ask me what I was doing there, and I didn't want to tell them that I was going to go visit, you know, Peace Park and the Hiroshima Museum for some reason. And when I would just say, oh, you know, I'm just passing through the city or something, they would look at me very sternly.
Sex tourism.
Say,
I'm here for sex tourism.
That's usually told. Yeah. Well, in that case, they'd be like, oh, down this way.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, they would kind of sternly look at me and say, you know, you should go to the Hiroshima Monument. You should go to Peace Park. So I did. And, you know, it was horrifying. And one of the things that was interesting about it, it's one of the few places left in Japan where they will fly a giant Japanese flag. And people will show emotion in public, and they will go to the little shrine in the center.
Like the rising
park.
Sun flag.
Yeah. Honestly, well, it's just the meatball. It's not the. It doesn't have the imperial bars on.
That's
it,
like God. That's one of the best flags ever. I love
it's
that.
Pretty,
flag.
It's pretty.
Really
tight.
Cool.
It's a good flag.
It's them in Albania. They've got the winners.
There is a certain irony to having a rising sun flag and then having a literal sun drop on top of you.
yeah. Got him.
I went and saw, you know, they preserve the melted bodies and fingernails and hair and oh, you know, fuck. All these horrific things in the museum. And it didn't really change my feelings about the bomb still being a good idea because, and this is the other thing, you know, people talk about civilian death, but it's like the Japanese were training civilians to suicide bomb tanks. I mean, that if you ever read about X-Day, the planned invasion of Japan and how many casualties there would have been and, you know, what the Japanese strategy to stop the Allies would have been. And you realize how much civilian death there would have been.
Are you one of those guys now?
Yeah. I've always been one of these guys. I just think that there was no other way that things were going to end.
I mean, I'm not going to agree with you, at least explicitly in public, but on anything, frankly, but that's I mean, in terms of like the firebombings and stuff like that, like so many fucking more people
that
died.
That was going
at
to
least.
Continue. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we had ways to kill as many civilians as we wanted.
Right.
It's just that this happened to be instant and a very efficient show of force, but also, and like someone had to invent it. Now everyone invented it, so I guess someone had to use it first somewhere. I guess I have to like explicitly disagree with you, but I still don't know like where I would prefer it to have happened because I think it would have happened somewhere first, right? Like in terms of like. Technology, as a guy who's not officially an accelerationist, but is probably an accelerationist, I still do like necessarily believe that there's no way to avoid the inventions of new technologies and thereby like, I guess you have to speed up into them and try to catch it before someone else does.
Just real quickly before we get into this whole other argument, the overall point that I wanted to get into, the overall point that I wanted to make there was that Oppenheimer himself went to Japan. Nobody had any animosity towards him.
Well, that's also say, because he's Jewish and Asian people love Jews.
They love them. Oh, my God.
You know about Japan. That was one of their secret weapons programs, right?
Jewish people?
Yes.
Go on.
this was actually I will send you the fucking link. I can't remember the name, but the name of the plan was named after the blowfish sashimi, where if you cut the blowfish perfectly.
It's called Operation Fugu.
Yeah, I believe so. It was whatever blowfish is. It was like Operation Blowfish because with the most dangerous sashimi where, you know, you have to cut the blowfish perfectly to get the cut of fish that you want and not the poison. And it was this
idea.
Well,
you want a little bit of poison. That's the thing.
Was this idea that, well, the Germans, you know, the Nazis and their ideology, they hate the Jews because of the Jewish conspiracy where they're controlling all the banks and the media and stuff. And there was this proposed Japanese plan to be like, no, we will harness Jew power by basically taking the Jews off of the Germans' hands, resettling them in the new Japanese empire, and they'll run the new empire for us. They'll be our
rules.
This was actually proposed.
We should do that. Did we do that? Did we like we took all of the technology from the Nazis and then we took some Unit 741 stuff and then like Operation Blowfish and like is that how America was built?
On the backs of Jews. There you go. You're welcome.
on the backs of Jews, the Irish, and Chinamen. I'm not forgetting anyone.
Anyway, the overall point that I wanted to make was that it is incredible to me that there was no hostility towards Oppenheimer himself. The man actually went to Japan and nobody was mad at him. They didn't take it personally. He won fair and square. This is the most Japanese thing I've ever heard in my life.
Well, exactly. I was going to say, it's not surprising to me for extremely racist reasons.
They take the war guilt on themselves to a large extent. They take the war guilt on themselves, and it's not, there was no, you don't hear much stab in the back type of talk in Japan.
Right.
There are some of those people, but I mean, that's just not culturally how it was. It is incredible to me that the guy who built the bomb went to the country that was bombed and no one was mad at him. No one took it personally. I was kind of flabbergasted by that. I would have liked to have seen that in the movie.
Of course they didn't have it in the movie. I knew that because I've seen it.
if that had been the end of the movie, was Oppenheimer walking through Japan and like teaching physics?
See, I was disappointed with like the other half, like to drop the bomb and then keep going on with the story. The bureaucratic intrigue to me was like, I was already spent by then. And you know, it, even though it was like a dialogue heavy film, I felt that Oppenheimer was exhausting to watch. It kind of was like a shepherd's tone for me. It was like this constant ascension. And
that's a good fucking reference.
Thank you. And so like in the way he shoot, like everything was so fast, even when the dialogue was really slow, like everything's moving constantly. It was a lot like Tenet in that regard. And I was just beat by the end of it. I was like, I can't, like after 2 hours, like I can't do this anymore. It was just too much.
That Nolan editing, man.
I don't like it.
You don't like it.
It's too much for me.
I think it's incredible.
I need to feel exhausted at the end of a movie or I don't like it very much. Like even my fun movies, and this isn't, anyway, I'm not going to preface it, but like even my fun movies, like one of my favorite movies is Face Off. And that movie has like 8 endings. And that's one of the things that makes me like it so much as like a shitty B movie that I can experience like an Oppenheimer or like a Lord of the Rings or something, because it's just like it won't fucking stop. It keeps going. It doesn't need to do this to me. And then at the end I experience that catharsis, that like total depletion of self that I kind of require.
But the stakes are so low in that kind of movie, it's fine. With like this, that's supposed to be
in Face Off.
Yeah, low stake. It's not the nuclear bomb.
Oh my
bomb. God,
Isaac.
That's true.
He's saving his daughter. Sure, whatever.
No, you don't understand. No, it's not his. It's not just. It's not just his daughter.
It's his face too.
It's his very identity.
It's also no. Castor Troy is a fucking terrorist, and he's a genius. Okay, yeah. Castor Troy could destroy the fucking world if he wanted to with his two golden desert eagles. All right, he could do it, and he will. He will, especially if he has access to the FBI. The only man stopping Castor Troy is whatever the fuck the FBI agent's name is, because who cares what the good guy's name is? But the stakes are just as high. Trust me.
If you were Oppenheimer, If you were Oppenheimer, would you have sabotaged the work?
No.
No. Well, no. Again, it's the my like weird, sad accelerationist kind of tendency where it's like someone has to do it. Someone's going to do it. It's going to occur. I'd have to do it.
Here's my
I wish I would stop it. Oh, he's walking off. He's like, fuck this. I wish I would have stopped it, but I wouldn't. I don't think I would.
My favorite alternate history scenario, the one that I've played over in my head, is, you know, what if World War I didn't happen? What if Franz Ferdinand wasn't assassinated? You know, what if World War I didn't happen and ostensibly
somebody had to do it?
You don't get
somebody had to kill them, right?
If World War I didn't happen, then you don't have, I don't think the Bolsheviks take over Russia, and then I don't think you have fascism come up as a response, and you don't have World War II, and you don't have any of this, right? And so I've always wondered about this, which is, what would have happened? Would the world have just been a slower? Would we be in some kind of steampunk, radiopunk world where there's still royalty that rules most of the earth, and the technology and history just moved more slowly? I kind of like to imagine this world, right? But then I think, no, they would have all just been stocked. They would have had like an extra decade or maybe even an extra 2 or 3 decades to just keep stocking up weapons and keep experimenting with this stuff. And then would you end up with World War One happening in like the 1950s? And except now everybody is shooting like tactical nukes out of cannons at each other because nobody really understands modern war. There is something to me, sometimes I have this weird thought where it's like, maybe we really do live in the best possible of all worlds.
Oh my God.
Where the technology, we had these two cataclysmic wars that were just bad enough and just trickled into the world in such a way that we didn't completely wipe each other off the map. And it actually did end in nuclear peace. Because this is the thing, nuclear peace is awesome until it's not. And so far we've had almost a century of it. There was no World War III because of the bomb. That is true. That was true in 1945, and that is true today. There was no World War III because of the bomb. We still live under in the age of nuclear peace, and it's like it just happened to trickle into the world. The bomb came into the world in such a way that that is how things ended up. I find that to be kind of incredible.
We're far more likely to accidentally nuke ourselves than to like actually push the button. And there have been so many countless calls. And that's I'm not usually like an alien guy, or I'm more into God, but something prevented those things from actually happening, because it seems like it should have.
And the fact that the first bomb is called Trinity, you know, all of the and Oppenheimer's obsession with religion, and the fact that he actually was like trying to learn as much lore as he could, the theological dimension of it, there is an incredible spookiness to it.
Barbie time. Let's go.
Okay. So I want to say this. Isaac, you were saying before that you thought that I didn't like Barbie. I want to say something right now. I am in awe of Barbie. I'm absolutely
awe is an interesting word to use. Okay.
I am truly in awe. I'm truly in awe of Barbie.
I was
mesmerized by Barbie. I thought that Barbie was incredible. In fact, what I've been saying is Barbie is more Schizotopia than Schizotopia. Instead of listening to this podcast, you can just watch Barbie. And I'm not, if you go back to episode 0, the first episode I ever did of this podcast over 3 years ago, I talk about superhero movies and how we live in a disempowered age and we need these figures to project ourselves into. And I also talk about how, you know, you are constantly being bombarded by nonstop contradictory political messages that force everybody to live in a constant state of schizophrenic mania. And like, whether they meant to or not, that is what the Barbie movie is. It's about a fantasy world that we project initially it's women, and they're sort of like this fantasy world, they project their needs and their cultural conflicts into the figure of Barbie. But then also you have the kind of like red-pilled Ken who he comes and he learns about the patriarchy. He tries to take the patriarchy back to Barbie world. But then he kind of has this weird redemption arc where Barbie acknowledges that she took him for granted. And the thing is, you could say that's a little bit of a rebuttal to feminism or women or wokeness, where it's like you guys are actually taking men for granted. You've gone too far in this girl bossness or something like that. But also because of the way the story is set up in Barbie world, Ken and the Kens, the men of Barbie world, are like the women of our world. And so it's also still a feminist message. So it actually gets to have its cake and eat it too, in a way that I found to be impressive. But the thing that I was in awe of is this, just from a big picture standpoint, this movie was incredibly successful. I mean, this movie is not just successful, but it's a huge brand name. It's Mattel, I believe the biggest toy company in the world, endorsed this movie, allowed this movie to be created.
They didn't just endorse it though. I think that's an understatement.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they put their brand on this movie, and it's an art film deconstruction of the meaning of Barbie and feminism and masculinity and all of these things. And
all with the intention, though, it deconstructs it with the intention of deconstructing it unhelpfully, frankly, where it's like what you said, where you know, Ken is experiencing, while it's a commentary on like the Andrew Tate type people, the red pill, it's mm-hmm. also a commentary or kind of an example of what it's like to be a woman, and so it's doing these kind of things which seem in gesture and in affect to be meaningful ideological statements, but ultimately it's conflating two kind of opposing notions and experiences into one and neutralizing both. It brings in ideologies, makes you feel as if you've experienced some kind of meaningful commentary, and then throws them all out the window so that you can then go on to enjoy Barbie. So it's the Mattel version of an art film, which pretends to be an art film in order to, you know, kind of just go back to Mattel. That's all it is. I mean, sorry to be the like.
No, I'm gonna.
I don't know, Max. I don't know if you've heard of a little book. It's not very well known. It's called Capitalist Realism.
What?
Get the fuck out of here. Listen, let me tell you about another book. It's called The New Testament, particularly the Book of John. The Word was made flesh.
Shut up.
The conclusion of this film is that Barbie decides to take on the burden of being a human being, and she incarnates as a flesh
by
and
getting
blood woman.
Her pussy looked at.
And I was fucking shocked by that too. This entire movie, the punchline for the entire movie is a pussy joke. I was in awe. I mean it. I was really like this movie, the conclusion of this movie, after you go through the whole culture war, gender war melee, the conclusion of the movie is Barbie decides to take on the burden of being a real human being. So it's like a Pinocchio story. And then the big joke at the end is I'm here to see my gynecologist. Yeah. So now she's got pussy problems. She's not a plastic fake woman anymore. And I was kind of like that. I was shocked by that. I was shocked that they would have this whole movie. Once again, as you said, Mattel put their brand on this movie and made this. And this movie was successful. And the punchline for the entire film is a pussy joke. Incredible.
Because so many movies end with or are simply dick jokes, right?
Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, fair enough. It was just like Barbie's got something for everybody. It really successfully had its cake and ate it too, where yes, you got the feminist girl boss narrative, but then also you have that narrative constantly being challenged. They talk about white feminism. They talk about, you know, Barbie is hated because she's some kind of impossible white woman ideal and this sort of stuff. It's all over the place. It's pure schizotopia. You can't form an opinion about anything anymore.
Right.
And you're constantly subjected to this melee of living inside of a fantasy world where everybody's trying to live out their fantasy about what politics is or should be or what their utopian vision should be. And the conclusion is you should abandon all of that and reincarnate in the real world as a human being. If you see Barbie as like a metaphor for leaving internet bullshit world and trying to go back to real life, holy shit, go outside. If that's how you interpret that pussy joke at the end, then Barbie's like
touch pussy. Go outside, touch pussy.
Go outside and get your pussy looked at. Yeah.
Well, it's that, but it's also you know, it's telling you to like touch grass. It maybe if you're being optimistic about it, but I think it's also telling you to remove all forms of ideology and idealism in the sense that like if we're all just human. Right, where no one can be ideal, no one can produce any kind of ideology or utopia, non-existent plays. No person can produce a more perfect world, as is attempted throughout the entire film. Because the fact that we're all Knuff, you know, we're all ourselves, we're all human beings, we're all flesh and blood. So why try to make it better? We're good enough as we are, you know.
And this,
oh no,
this,
is this just major
get your pussy looked at?
This is
Matrix 4.
It's
all
only fans joke. What?
Barbie to me is kind of like the 21st century 1984, in that like it's this thing that stands for anything you want it to. Like it is both explicitly political,
stop it,
but completely inscrutable.
Oh, you're one of those guys.
Well, it's this movie was a boom for Mattel, for Hollywood, but especially for underemployed master's graduates in like social theory. The amount of like queer
Fuck
Marxist
you.
Theory,
the amount of queer yeah, Marxist exactly theory, what we need.
Video
I,
essays
exactly
I saw
what we need
were outrageous, and like everyone was projecting these. It is a good like sort of Rorschach test in a way. It's like how what you're projecting what Barbie you think Barbie is saying.
It's
like
it's very plastic. Pun intended.
The pussy joke in the end. You could interpret the ending as either transphobic or pro-trans. You know, like
I wasn't even going to touch that, but yes.
Yeah, you need a vagina to be a woman, or you can install a vagina and become a woman. Yeah. Although it's unclear to me whether she like was you granted can choose one by to Will Ferrell as or a not. Woman. I don't know.
Anyone can choose to incarnate as a woman. Yeah, it's pro-trans, fine.
But also, you need a pussy to be a woman, which is transphobic.
Well, I mean, unless you want to be, but they, you know, but they had, I don't know, they had trans Barbie.
Well, it's they what did. I will say it is, is it's neoliberal, which I mean, duh.
Sure.
like it, so what is it? And it's an awful word to use because it's just exhausting to use it and everyone uses it for everything. But I feel the same way about Barbie as I feel at this point in my life about polyamory as someone who was, you know, poly in the past, right? Which is it's a movie which is designed for a perfect experience in that it produces no one experience and it allows you to shop around for anything okay. you might want to plug into it. Well, just like, you know, Isaac was saying, where it's like, oh, you know, we don't need a death of the author to occur here to like really to impose our own idea. Sorry, someone's going to yell at me for misusing death of the author, and that's fine. But we don't need to get into a space where the author can't tell us what it means. Because it didn't really mean anything to begin with. It's there simply for you to shop around and plug new kind of ideas in. Okay. Because the whole movie is just about being, again, sorry to make the joke again, it's about being Kenneth, right? It's about you yourself being someone who can decide what their life is, what meaning is, and to kind of move on. And that's also the thing that makes it anti-revolutionary and anti-ideological, because it's just saying, dude, yo, it's chill, whatever you want. Like you did a Pangloss reference when it came to Oppenheimer, right? Best of all possible worlds. Well, I mean, this is the cultivation of gardens for any viewer, right? Where you can build your own experience as if it was a doll. Right, you get to just plug in different parts in order to produce something, and it's like the ultimate in terms of like a neoliberal film, and that's why that's another reason I think that the two of them were so perfectly matched and kind of accentuated one another's success, is because Barbie has this kind of plug and play, do what you want with it, you can view it however you want in order to feel good about yourself kind of thing, and then you move on. Whereas Oppenheimer is about a monolithic figure who is still viewed ambiguously in a lot of ways, but ultimately you are given an opportunity to view someone else as, again, being monolithic, as being someone who you can transpose genuine ideology onto that isn't necessarily part of you being you, right?
All right, before I respond to any of that, Isaac, is there anything that you wanted to get in about Barbie?
No, I was, I have my own rant about how Oliver Anthony is like the trinity of this situation too, and that he fits into it.
Well, hold on. I want to say this about the Barbie movie.
Go on.
What I was saying to some people after seeing Barbie was that if this movie had come out 10 years ago or 20 years ago, give or take, I can tell you with almost 100% certainty, okay, I can look through my magic little crystal and I can see what the Barbie movie would have been in any other decade would have basically been the movie Clueless, where you have a rich, spoiled girl who lives in a perfect plastic Barbie world, and then she has to go on a quest to be less selfish and care about other people and something like that. And the conclusion of the movie is she's still herself. You know, she still goes back to her palace, but now she's learned something about how to be more gracious or more understanding of other people or care about the poor or something like that. I'm almost positive that's what the Barbie movie would have been. You could have just had a live action Barbie who lived in some Malibu fantasy world. She's not even the doll or anything like that. You didn't have to deal with the doll fantasy world. You just call it Barbie and it's about some super hyper ideal woman who goes on a quest to learn something about the rest of the world. Siddhartha, basically. But anyway, in any other decade, I'm positive that's what the Barbie movie would have been. And it's so interesting to me that the world's gone so schizo that this is a mainstream Mattel movie, this fucking bizarre art film that has a bunch of different competing political narratives that ends with Barbie deciding to take on the burden of becoming flesh. I do. I think that that was, not only do I think that it made for an interesting movie, an actually interesting movie, but it says something about just how weird our culture's gotten. Because Barbie is ostensibly like all of these other franchise characters. She's like a superhero. I mean, she's basically a superhero. But now we can't even have the superhero movie anymore. We can't accept it without having the whatever, the critique of the thing inside of the thing, but then the critique gets negated by the end of the movie. And that was a mainstream film. So, and I know they're talking about making Polly Pocket and trying to do the Mattel universe, extended universe movie series.
Lena Dunham's doing that one.
If they're all this fucking weird, I'm kind of down for it. It's I don't know if it's the movies that I think we should be making, but maybe they're the movies that we deserve.
If they make a Mighty Max movie, I'll fucking come.
A Mighty Max movie about toxic masculinity.
Yes! Yeah, he just has to kill that Frankenstein guy fight on a giant snake.
A Mighty Max movie, maybe it doesn't have to be about like toxic masculinity, or he did that with Ken. It's like a Mighty Max movie, but he's also a, he has like severe PTSD from the War on Terror. And like that's how he transfers into Mighty Max world is like through his PTSD episodes. Mattel, call me. I got some ideas. Anyway,
nice.
Is there anything else about Barbie? Do we got anything else about Barbie? I think I've said everything I had to say about Barbie. No, Isaac, you said you had a rant about Barbie. Please, I'm sorry.
That wasn't about Barbie per se. No, it was. It again for me, it's like the inscrutability of things now. Like I love confusion. I love it when things are ambiguous, but ambiguous in a way that can make you reconsider and not reaffirm. And this is the kind of confusion, this is the kind of ambiguity that allows people just to like reaffirm their pre-existing ideas. And so I just don't see change coming about it. I don't think anyone went into Barbie and came out a different person. I think everyone went in and came out the same. And that's what's frustrating to me about it, because that's my feeling.
I'm gesturing wonder,
wildly,
I think,
because I agree with Isaac. I need the listener to know that I'm flailing my arms around.
This is an audio only podcast, but please, everyone know Dorian is in fact.
I'm doing this. Everyone can see it, right?
I actually think that what they did with Ken was pretty interesting. And then kind of letting Ken steal the show and sort of have his own little hero quest within the larger Barbie story. That was, and this is a thing, it's they couldn't just make woke Barbie. They had to have a counterbalance inside of the movie too. There's nothing in this movie. This is why I liked it. There's nothing in this movie. This movie ultimately says nothing because it says everything. It has its cake and eats it too, but it does so in a pretty artful way. So it is. It's pure schizotopia. It's more schizotopia than schizotopia. I think that thesis, I
totally agree with. I think you're completely right about that. But I actually, unlike Barbie, when I first started listening to your show, I came out with different thinking. Like, you actually changed my mind on things is the difference. Whereas with Barbie, I remain unchanged. It perpetuates misogyny because Ken was funny. And Barbie was not. And it's just, you know, come on.
Barbie, I laughed. Barbie had some funny moments in the movie. I'm sorry. I liked both the movies. I think people were expecting me not to.
I had fun watching Barbie and thought both these movies
are great.
I didn't like either movie.
Fuck up, Dorian.
And I've never changed my mind about anything in my life. So I just need everyone to know both of those facts.
Two things.
I've always been right about everything.
I promise to reveal my deep, long-standing celebrity crush.
Oh yeah,
it's me.
Which is America Ferrera shows up in this movie. You AKA like Ugly Betty.
Sicko.
I've always had a huge crush on her, and it warmed my heart that I didn't know she was in this movie, and it warmed my heart that she popped up in it. And I think she's still looking real cute.
Who?
Yeah, I think people kind of forgot about America Ferrera. She had her moment with Ugly Betty, which was like really popular in the 2000s and then got canceled. But there you have it.
Oh. Okay.
I had fun. I had fun watching.
She's a human woman.
I would not watch either of those movies ever again, though.
All right. I will absolutely. I don't actually feel the need to watch Barbie again because Barbie, look, everything I said in the very first episode of this podcast is perfectly brought to life by the movie Barbie. And I feel like I could end this whole podcast there. Just watch Barbie and think about it. And you're saying, well, it makes, you know, listening to me, you change your mind on things where you don't feel like Barbie challenges the audience enough. I think, well, once again, taking this big brand, iconic IP, Barbie, and doing this weird ass art film with it, and the fact that it was actually successful, it does show a world, if we're going to be truly neoliberal, it shows a world where everybody can have their own opinion, and that's okay.
How is an art movie?
Oh, I think, dude, this movie was not...
It has a gay affect. That's...
Yes. Yeah, correct.
It's gay.
It has a gay surrealism that you would not see in the average Hollywood blockbuster. Absolutely. No, every couple of years, an art fag sneaks into Hollywood and gets a bunch of money and gets to make a movie. I mean, that's who Tim Burton was. That's why I love Tim Burton, because he's
As an ex-goth kid... I would like to say Tim Burton has made 1.5 good films, and I hate him.
It's my ass. What is the 1.5 good films?
He made, well, the 1/2 of it is Edward Scissorhands. Movie's fine. It's pretty good. And the one is, I mean, can you guess? It has
Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
A dance number.
Batman. The second
Batman's Big Adventure.
Okay, yeah. Fine. He's made 2.5 good.
You
films.
Don't think
Nightmare,
you don't...
Nightmare Before Christmas.
No, as far as I'm concerned, that he was like a producer on that. No, it was
it's still Burton. The whole Willy thing Wonka, is still Burton inspired. Also, you're forgetting Batman 89. Still the best superhero movie ever made, in my opinion.
I'm delaying because I forgot the movie, the name of the movie that I like.
It's Mars Attacks.
It's the one about Mars Attacks. Dead. No, he made Mars Attacks too. Okay, fine.
Yeah, yeah. Like Mars Attacks is great.
Mars Attacks rules. Batman, those movies rule.
Man, we're turning into that kind of podcast right now. This is sad.
Who gives a shit? My point is that like
Beetlejuice.
That's
the one good one.
Yeah. Oh, well, you just acknowledge liking half his fucking movies. So like my point is that Tim Burton was a guy who I think was making movies that were very contra the standard Hollywood lineup, and he got away with it for a while, and that's awesome. It happens every now and then.
Ed Wood is good too.
Yeah, you fucking motherfucker. Tim Burton's great. What are you talking about?
James and the Giant Peach was all right. I liked it.
Keep yeah,
when I was a kid.
Anyway,
Corpse Bride was shit.
To me, I'm just sucked. Saying. To me, I'm just saying this Barbie movie. No, this was not like the Marvel. Michael Bay,
Frankenweenie.
This isn't the Barbie movie. I'll put it this way: like I was saying, if Barbie had been made 10 years ago, it basically would have been a version of Clueless.
That would have been the standard Hollywood movie. Linkin Park, Powerless was fine. Probably, I don't know. I don't.
Anyway,
remember.
I want to talk about the Barbie.
Big Eyes was an awful movie.
I want to talk about the Barbenheimer before Barbenheimer.
Have you seen Big Eyes? I think that's actually why I hate him.
Yeah.
No,
that movie's awful.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to talk
about
the
good cast too. It's awful. No, we're talking about Big Eyes now. That's what this podcast.
You didn't even
is about.
See either of these movies, and we've been fucking bullshitting about it the entire time.
Can you also? He didn't see either movie. Can you like measure who talks the most at the end of this? By the way, like can you time it?
Can I measure what?
I think Dorian may be in the lead. He may have a narrow lead over me in talking time. Isaac, as always, you've been the most polite, but. And something I know for a fact, saw. I want to talk about the Barbenheimer before Barbenheimer, which was Twin Peaks: The Return, particularly episode 8.
We all remember episode 8, right?
It's the one that has the Trinity test. Come on.
It's the one
where the nuke goes off and you go inside of the
nuke. I'm Dorian right now. Oh, so let me talk the most about something I haven't
seen. Please talk about Twin Peaks: The Return, part 8, the original Barbenheimer. By all means, Isaac.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. But I have nothing to say. I didn't see it.
My point is, I asked you guys if you'd seen this before we did this podcast.
I said no.
Oh.
Or at least I didn't like it. So
okay, so you didn't like it, so you don't remember. But there is, if you guys remember Twin Peaks, The Return, Part 8, the episode that everybody was into, the part that shows the Trinity test, the nuke going off, you go in the nuke, you see Bob, the evil demon, you see Laura Palmer, all of this. And what's interesting to me is that we already had Barbenheimer kind of programmed into the culture before Barbenheimer Summer, before 2023, before any of this, where you had in Twin Peaks this whole plot line of it's the nuke that goes off and it unleashes this evil in the world, and then there has to be this counterforce to that evil. So basically, Laura Palmer ends up being like the Messiah. She comes down almost to be sacrificed in order to counterbalance Bob. At least that's as much as I ever tried to interpret that episode.
David Lynch is fucking awful. I love him and he's fucking awful. Like, did you hear any of the words you just said?
I mean,
that's terrible.
Why is it terrible?
I'll let the listener kind of sort it out. But
no, why don't we just sort it out now? Why is it terrible?
Okay, so I liked Twin Peaks. But it's I don't know where to start. My brain can't get it out at this point. But just this idea of you, and then you go into the nuke and you see this like girl from this kitschy TV show who was murdered and left in a bag on the beach, and she's like Jesus, right? And then this guy Bob, who's a scary Native American man who comes up behind people's couches, and he's like the evil opposite of her, who is also he appears in a scary stripey room sometimes. Like it's incredible. Okay. That
I mean, I'm giving my ham-fisted, like absolute simplistic interpretation. Yes. The most simplistic.
Again, I love David
possible.
Lynch and I love Twin Peaks, but also I hate him and he sucks.
Like, okay, there was something that I wanted to bring up. It's called Twin Perfect, and
God damn it.
It's this YouTuber. He has a 4.5-hour video where he basically gives his grand thesis about what Twin Peaks was about. And his whole thesis is that originally you were never supposed to find out who killed Laura Palmer. It was supposed to be
that's
this
literally true. Also, I don't know if that's a theory. I think that's what David Lynch said.
Okay. It factors into his overall theory, right? You were never really supposed to find out. And eventually the studio forced this on David Lynch. And as a result, and the idea, his theory, I guess, if we're not going into what's literally true about Twin Peaks, his theory was that the original point that David Lynch wanted to make is that it's like our voyeurism, our bloodlust, our need for sensationalism, we feed into this demon. We feed into this demon, and because now you're going to force him to reveal, you're going to force him to actually tell you who killed this woman. He's going to drag it out in the most insane way possible to sort of punish you for your voyeurism. And that's what Fire Walk With Me was. And that's what Twin Peaks The Return was. And so when you're saying like, this is absurd that we're inside of a nuclear explosion and it's being explained to us that it brought a demon into the world. So then some other celestial forces decided they had to drop this messianic angel into the world to be a sacrifice to stop it. You're right. It is ridiculous. And it's ridiculous because you won't stop watching it.
Yeah, like I said, I love him, kinda, and it's because he's awful.
I think that's kind of cool, actually.
Damn, dude.
Anyway, what I thought was interesting about it is that, you know, Barbie is sort of associated with the post-war era, and it's associated with consumption and like the 1950s housewife and all this stuff, which they talk about at the beginning of the Barbie movie. And what ushered in this era? I would say nuclear peace, right? I would say the fact that America got the bomb, and then after that, you were going to have this new hegemonic world power through the bomb. And so you can see Barbie and you can see the bomb as two sides of the same coin to a certain extent. And I think you also kind of see that in Twin Peaks. And it's admittedly campy dualism.
I agree.
No, you don't. I'm just thinking about a non-nuclear conflict between the Soviet Union and the United States would have looked like if so because of the nuclear bomb, we just had these proxy wars. Correct? Is that your theory?
I wouldn't call that my theory. Yes, the U.S. and Soviet Union had a long twilight conflict,
and so maybe the conflict would have ended sooner, or it would have been different had we had like a hot conflict between us and the Russians.
I'm saying that at the end of World War II, the Red Army outnumbered everybody about 10-1. If they had wanted to, you know, in the absence of nuclear weapons, they could have just pushed right on, taken the rest of the continent. And that would have led to, almost certainly led to another war. I mean, in the absence of nukes, I just don't really see how the U.S. and the Soviet Union don't end up fighting a third world war through conventional warfare. It would have been very opportune for the Soviet Union.
Okay. Different conversation.
this whole episode is just going to be a series of different things where Max says something and it's sort of interesting, and then one of us says,
No, I mean, I don't know, I'm dumb. I will say one more thing about the movies. I really identified with Josh Hartnett's character, because he says theory is gay and you should just like do shit. And that's me. I'm like an anti-theory guy. And I just, you know, I like to do stuff. So I identified with him, and he was the most handsome and the tallest and the strongest. And so that was my favorite part of Oppenheimer. Seeing myself
on
screen.
I will synthesize that and simply say that being tall and handsome and strong is cool.
Max, all right. Yeah.
How will you synthesize what we've said?
You guys can fuck you.
Come on. Make it better.
Make what better?
Being handsome, tall, and cool. Make it better.
I wanted to talk about Barbenheimer as being something deeper than it seemed. Apparently, all of the art that I grew up on is stupid. And I shouldn't waste
James
my time.
James and the Giant Peach. I changed my mind. It sucks now.
Yeah, I shouldn't look for anything deeper in any of this. What's the point? In fact, why even watch movies when you can just pontificate about them without having actually seen them?
Batman Forever, also bad.
That's not.
I love that one.
Mars Attacks.
That's Schumacher. Batman Forever is Schumacher.
God. Yeah, it's Schumacher.
Shut up.
It's also, it has.
They're the same person.
You haven't even seen any of these Batman movies either. All right.
I've never seen a movie.
I believe that, actually. I believe that now.
I do need the listener to know, though, while I haven't seen either of these movies, I did watch about 30 seconds of Barbie in Swahili.
Okay, how was that?
So, it's fine.
Best movies
I've
seen.
It felt neoliberal.
Doesn't everything? What doesn't? Yep. Okay, Isaac, where can people find you? Is anyone you want to give a shout out to, including yourself?
You can find me at gluten_daddy. Mm. I also have my own podcast whose name is going to change, I promise. But for now, it's
I like the name.
Cheeseburger in Babylon. It's too much. You said it wrong when you were on my show. You couldn't even remember it.
It's so. A good name.
I said I can have Cheeseburger in Babylon. I was just kidding. It would be a funny name, though. Dorian, where can people find you? Is anyone want to give a shout out to, including yourself?
I keep accidentally saying Cheeseburger in Paradise. I think, again, because of Max. It's a good name. I like it. Just change it to Cheeseburger in Paradise. You can find me at Dank Deluz, which is Dank Deluz, spelled DELEUZE. Otherwise, check out my writing workshop, where we watch movies and we actually watch them, but some people lie about it, unlike me. At patreon.com/truncata, TRUNCATA. Otherwise.
Okay, can we all agree on wishing everybody a happy Labor Day?
Happy Labor Day, everybody.
Happy Labor Day.
It's not
happy
even the Labor real Day. Labor Day.
It's America's Labor Day. And
no,
we have
America
bomb,
has
so.
Two Labor Days. May Day is the Labor Day. You people don't know anything about direct action.
Well, nothing.
You're
nothing
all theory,
more,
no practice. Happy
nothing
Labor
more,
Day.
Nothing
Sorry.
More direct than a nuke, okay? And that's why we're all living in a Barbie world.
We love you.
Oh,
warm. Well.